This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, wrapping up a conversation that has spanned two episodes with Victor Killingsworth, 93 years young, of Taft, California. If you've been through Taft in the last few years, I'm guessing you couldn't help but notice the largest bronze statue in all of California. It's that Taft Oil Worker Monument, a memorial to those who pioneered the industry, which remains the driver of the economy in Taft and all of Kern County, really. Mr. Killingsworth spearheaded the effort to fund and construct that memorial, produced by a Taft native named Benjamin Victor. It's definitely a must-see if you find yourself near Taft. And Mr. Killingsworth's book, A Gator Navy, I'd say is a must-read, but the memories recorded in that book aren't the only things that came home with you from World War II. You have quite a few souvenirs that you brought back, and I wanted to ask you about one, because you write in the book about seeing plans for the invasion of Japan. Are you one who believes that if the atomic bombs had not been dropped, that you wouldn't be here?
I'm convinced of it. When I was in Japan, Buddy and I got a car. Being an officer, they would furnish us a car. Civilians drove them. It was their car. They would sign up with the Army to rent their car and themselves out as a driver. So we got one of these cars, and this guy took us to the, because I knew where we were going to land, because I had seen the landing plan. As a communication officer, I was in charge of top secret documents, and we'd picked up the landing plan in Manila. And so I knew where we were going to land. So we went there, and I was able to see that area. And I told my buddy, I said, if we'd tried to land here, we'd have lost a million men. And 50 years later, they released the official figures, and it was in Newsweek. And the generals had estimated a million men.
And what was it that you saw? Was it just where the guns would have been? And
well, it was in an area where there was a lot of ridges and mounds and so on. So when we went there that day, we saw a Japanese, not a pillbox, but a place where they guard house. So we got out and went to see what it was all about. And this mountain was like an ice cream cone turned upside down. And we were able to go inside the mountain that scooped out the inside. And it had a pathway that went up this thing, spiraled up to the top. And every 50 feet or so, they had a machine gun pit. And in that walkway, they had wooden floorboards. I pulled those up, and underneath there was food. There was everything to stay there for a long period of time. And knowing the tenaciousness of the Japanese, they would have held on there. I mean, we would have had to go through one after another, just like at Iwo Jima. They had the crossfire. It was so intense. We lost more Marines, more casualties than any place else. And going into Japan itself would have been hell.
Well, I guess then it's a good thing that you guys secured Tinian so the B-29 could take off there and drop those bombs. And I imagine you probably had high esteem for President Truman.
Yes, yes. Well, I felt it was horrible what they had to do to Japan. But in the long run, it saved millions of lives, I'm convinced.
On both sides, for sure. Speaking of, there are a lot of things that you brought back from the war. I don't have time to talk about all of them, but one of them that's certainly eye-catching and is fascinating to feel, too, is the silk flag. It's big enough that you can roll it up and tie it around your waist, and that's exactly what the Japanese soldiers did. It's got the rising sun in the middle and then a lot of Japanese characters written on there. What's the story of how you came back with that flag?
Well, I traded a bottle of bourbon for it. We, after things had settled down at Tinian, we had a liquor lounge, and I was not a big drinker at the time. And one of the Marines had this battle flag, and he wanted a bottle of bourbon, and so we made a deal. So I got the flag, and he got the bottle. Probably the bourbon's gone by now, but I still got the flag.
You have a lot of other souvenirs, too. You have knives, clubs. You have one of those bolo knives the Chamorros used in the Philippines. And this little piece right here is something I can't say I've ever seen before. It's pretty fascinating. There's a wooden structure around it, a glass top, and some Japanese writing on the little metal label that's screwed on. What is this thing that looks like some kind of futuristic spaceship or something?
This is very unique. I don't think you'll find any of these anywhere else. This was from a two-man Japanese submarine. When we went into Yokohama Harbor, my buddy and I were out exploring and went to this Japanese naval base. And they had about six of these subs in construction inside of dry dock. And the workers were, must have been their lunchtime or something. They're all sitting around in a circle smoking opium. They had a pipe they're passing around. So they weren't paying attention to us. So we went up there. He said I was crazy. I said, I'm going to go inside one of those two-man subs. He said, you're nuts. I said, no, I want to see what they look like. So I went inside the hatch and got down in there. And the workers had left some pliers and tin snips and things there they'd been working. So I said, you know, nobody ever believed I was at a two-man Japanese submarine. So I took the tin snips and cut off the dome light. This was a dome light in a two-man Jap submarine and brought it home with me so I could prove I was at a Japanese.
And it's very well preserved. And I'll put a picture of it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. You'll also see a picture of it in his book, The Gator Navy, some other fascinating photos as well. As we wrap this up, a few more questions for you. How many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids do you have?
Well, I have three beautiful, wonderful daughters. And then I have five grandchildren. I have four boys and one girl. And I always told my granddaughter I have four ugly grandsons and one beautiful granddaughter. So she likes that. And now I have four great-grandchildren, aged from 16 to 2 months. And there's two boys and two girls. So we have four great-grandchildren.
Well, by my count, then, that's a dozen people who wouldn't be here if you didn't survive all those close calls. Is that kind of eye-opening to think about it that way?
It is, and we have a very close family, and I think about that every time we get together, how unique it was for me to be able to find my love in Virginia and me in California and to be able to... Only a war would do those things.
It did all happen as a result of the war. God has some funny plans for us sometimes. And you ended up back in Taft. You had a sporting goods store there, Taft Sporting Goods, for many, many years. What do you love about your hometown? Because you grew up there and you're still there.
Well, when I came back from the service, Mr. Blackman, I told you about earlier, had offered me a job with Associated Oil Company. And he did offer me a job, but... My wife liked Taft. She was away from her family. She came from a big family. So she felt good when she was around my family, around people. Most of them lived in Taft at that time. So she said, I'd rather stay in Taft. I'd offered a job in Ventura as a personnel manager for Associated, but she wanted to stay in Taft. So we did. We bought a sporting goods store that had been started just a few months before. And for 38 years, it was only 3 years I did less business. For 35, I was always growing and it kept my interest. I always thought about moving and leaving, and we looked at places, different parts of the country, but the business held our interest and made a lot of good friends at Taft, a small town. And if we had to do it over again, I'd do it the same way. I could be home in 5 minutes, and I could be, you know, at the football game in 5 minutes, and so I like that.
Can't take that for granted. And in the book, folks will even see that you ran into one of your old Taft College buddies during the war. I'll save that story for those who read the book. And speaking of the book, it was Peggy that twisted your arm, told you needed to write this?
Yes. I guess I bored her silly for years, recounting the stories, and finally she said, you know, you need to write a book for your family, for your grandkids, so they will know a little bit about the war and know a little bit about family history. So it was at her prodding, and I didn't think I could do it till I retired. So when I had retired, I had the time.
And you had a little gentle prodding from your wife, Peggy. Let me slide over to Peggy to get this side of the story. Let me see if I have this right, Peggy. And the undercurrent to all of this is that you and Victor wouldn't have met in World War II if not for what happened to your father in World War I. And there were times that you wished you'd had a written account of your father's experiences. He fought for the British during World War I and came back with shrapnel in his elbow. And that's what led to your family coming to the United States, Do I have that right about how it all happened with your father?
After the war, he went home to get a job, and no one would hire him because he was injured in the war. So that's when my mother and father decided to come to this country. And that's how it all started. And the thing about it, we children had heard the story so much, and it was kind of boring, and we wouldn't pay any attention to it, you know. And Victor was telling the grandchildren all about it. And I told him, I think you should write a book and put all of that information, because I didn't write a book. I didn't know too much about what my father really went through. Yeah. So that's how it all got started.
Well, good job, Peggy. And Vic, good job to you. You know, I've read a ton of World War II books, and yours is really very well done, thorough, vivid. It makes you feel like you're living those adventures that you experienced. So great job, and I hope a lot of people pick it up. The one last thing I wanted to ask you about before we close this up was Honor Flight, because Kern County Honor Flight took you to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial. We heard about all those close calls. We heard you told us a story I'm thinking of now of that torpedo bomber where the guy waved to you and then they went down. And then you go to that memorial and see all those gold stars representing 400,000 Americans who didn't come home.
What was that experience like for you? What did you get out of that journey with Honor Flight Kern County?
It was very sobering again, and it was a wonderful experience. I think every veteran should try to go. I don't know of anything that the country could do that was better than that, really. I noticed, there's an Atlantic part of the memorial and a Pacific part of the memorial. And I noticed they have battles there described like in the Pacific. I was amazed at three or four of the battles they had there I had been in. And I saw other gentlemen there that were telling their buddies they're looking, and they were choked up in tears.
Yeah. And I know you experienced that too, and I know you're feeling it right now. I just want to say in closing, thank you for serving our country. Thank you for writing this phenomenal book to help us understand what it was like. Is there anything else I didn't ask you about that you want us to know?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. They have my book at Annapolis, and as part of the Navy archives, and they ordered a second one. Good. And so it will be part of naval history, and that makes me feel very proud.
Well, you should be. Quite a lot to be proud of. Victor Killingsworth, 93 years old. He's going to be 94 on Veterans Day. So if you happen to find yourself in Taft, California, come November 11th, make sure you track him down and say happy birthday. I'm sure you're also going to want to thank him for serving our country and for writing such an informative and entertaining book about the Gator Navy during World War II. On the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a video of Vic with one of those souvenirs you heard him discussing. You'll see him demonstrate how a Japanese soldier would have tied his silk Rising Sun flag around his waist. Next time on Hometown Heroes, we're going to hear from another Navy man, the first Navy SEAL to ever rise to the rank of Admiral. I'll look forward to sharing his story with you. And one final note for today's program, you've heard me talk about EECU and its sponsorship of this program, enabling me to provide CD copies for all the veterans who appear on Hometown Heroes. But I also want to recognize EECU, that is Educational Employees Credit Union, for its outstanding support of Honor Flight. Through a recent campaign donating money from every auto loan in the month of March, EECU raised $18,750 for Central Valley Honor Flight. That's enough to send more than a dozen World War II veterans to their memorial in Washington, D.C. So thank you again, EECU. And thanks again to KNZR in Bakersfield, our Hometown Heroes affiliate in Kern County, for allowing me to record this interview with Mr. Killingsworth there. We're out of time for now. Until next time, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.